19. Maracy waited inside the ship, forcing herself, with effort, to remain calm. How did Waxillium do it? He and Wayne could be so relaxed, it seemed like they could take a nap in the middle of a firefight. Well, she stood her ground, or rather knelt it, and was rewarded. Through the hole in the ship's hull, she watched the wall of the warehouse where the rooms were. Eirich soon hobbled out of one, then shuffled off and called toward some guards.
"What was that he said?" Maracy asked.
"He told them to send to Mr. Soot," Milan said. "You think he really stashed that device in the same place they're keeping the spike?"
"That's the hope," Maracy said.
"Shall we?"
Maracy nodded, then prepared herself for another nerve-wracking experience. Milan led, strolling down the planks and out into the open. Maracy followed, keeping her head high, as Milan had told her. "Look like you belong," the Chandra had said. "The first rule of impersonation is to belong." She felt completely exposed, as if she were dancing naked in the middle of Ellendale's hub. They reached the bottom of the gangway, walking with excruciating slowness, and crossed the floor of the warehouse to the door. Was Maracy walking too stiffly? She couldn't check over her shoulder, Milan had warned her about that. But surely a quick glance wouldn't hurt anything. "Stay firm." Milan tried the door, and blessedly it opened. The two of them stepped through into an empty hallway, and Maracy shut the door. No shouts of alarm followed. She was positive one of the carpenters had glanced at them, but nobody had said a word.
"Nice work," Milan said. "I feel like I'm going to puke." "Must run in the family," Milan said, leading her along the hallway.
It had bare wooden walls and smelled of sawdust, and a solitary electric light hung from the ceiling. Milan stopped at the simple door at the end, listened carefully, then tried the knob. This one was locked.
"You can open it," Maracy said, "like you did before."
"Sure,"
Milan said, kneeling by the doorknob.
"No problem. I'll try something more mundane first."
She cocked her hand, and a set of picks sprouted from the skin of her forearm. She plucked them free and started working on the door.
"Handy,"
Maracy said.
"Pun intended."
"That depends,"
she said, checking over her shoulder. The hallway was still empty. Fool girl.
"How many times have you heard that joke?"
Milan smiled, focused on her lockpicking.
"I've been alive pushing 700 years now, kid. You'll have trouble finding jokes I haven't heard."
"You know, I should really interview you sometime."
Milan cocked an eyebrow in her direction.
"You Chandra have a unique perspective on society," Maracy explained. "You've seen trends, movements across large scales."
"I suppose,"
Milan said, twisting her lockpick.
"What good does it do?"
"Statistics show that if we make subtle changes to our environment, the way we approach our legal system or employment rates, maybe even our city layout, we can positively influence the people living in that environment. Your head may hold the key to what those changes should be. You've seen society evolve, move. You've watched the shifting of peoples like the tides on a beach."
"My thigh,"
Milan said, twisting the doorknob with a click, then pushing the door open a crack. She nodded, standing up straight.
"Your what?"
Maracy asked.
"You said my head might hold the key,"
Milan said, striding into the chamber beyond, a small, surprisingly well-furnished room.
"It's actually my thigh right now. A Chandra stores its cognitive system through its entire body, but my memories right now are in a solid metal compartment in my thigh. Safer that way. People aim for the head."
"So what's in your head?"
"Eyes, sensory apparatus," Milan said, "and an emergency canteen."
"You're kidding."
"Nope,"
Milan said, hands on hips, scanning the room. Another door on the left led farther into the system of rooms built along the side of the warehouse, but there were no windows out to the main chamber, which was good. Though the room smelled of new sawdust, like the rest of the building, Here that was mixed with a scent of wood polish and a faint odor of cigar smoke. Light from a small electric desk lamp revealed a tidy study with rows of books in a bookcase, two plush chairs with a maroon and yellow pattern in front of the desk, and several decorative plants that probably had to be rotated outside each day to keep from wilting. Marcy trailed through the room, noting its oddities. Every room had them, marks of individuality, clues to the life of the occupant. The desk drawers had wide, exaggerated handles on them. The stand lamp in the corner had been bolted to the wooden floor, as had the chairs, likely to keep them in place should Eirich stumble into them. Marcy was not familiar with the man's disease, but it appeared he liked his chambers to accommodate a little fumbling. Milan went straight for the bookcase, then began pulling books off, toppling them to the ground.
"It's always behind the books," she said. "People don't like to read. They like to be seen as someone who reads.
Milan," Marcy said, then pointed to the large safe in the corner.
"Ah,"
Milan said, mid-ransack. She knocked the last few books off the shelf, perhaps for completeness' sake, then strode to the safe.
This is going to be a little tougher. Can't crack something like this with a set of picks."
"Can you manage it?" Marcy asked.
"Patience," Milan said. "Bring over that lamp."
Marcy took it from the desk, stretching out the cord to its fullest and directing its light for Milan. Milan said, then pressed her hand against the safe, ignoring the dial. Her fingers and palm went translucent, and then her flesh began to wiggle, squeezing into the joints, leaving behind crystalline bones held together with the barest of sinew. Marcy swallowed, mouth suddenly tasting bitter. She'd known Milan could do this, but watching it was something else. She busied herself, propping the lamp on the arm of the desk chair to give Milan light, though the Chandra now knelt with eyes closed, so who knew if she needed it any longer. Marcy then started rummaging through the desk drawers to see if she could find anything important.
"Harmony send that Eirich goes back to the scientists after this," Marcy thought, "instead of returning here to catch up on paperwork." "The world back then," Milan said suddenly, "wasn't all that different from the one now."
Marcy hesitated. Milan still knelt with her eyes closed, her strange bones exposed. The flesh had gone translucent all the way up to her elbow.
"What do you mean?" Marcy asked. "People talk about that time," Milan said. "The time of the Lord Mistborn, right after the Katasandra. They speak of it in hushed tones, as if it were some time of legends."
"It was," Marcy said. "The Counselor of the Gods, Hammond, Alrian Ladrian, they forged a new world."
"Yeah, sure," Milan said. "But they also squabbled like children, and each one had their own vision of what this new world should be. Half the reason you're having troubles now is because they didn't care about settlements outside of Elendil. The originators were big city people through and through. You want trends? Want to know what I've seen? People are people. Hell, even Chandra act the same in our own way. Life then was like life now, only you have better street food."
Marcy pondered this, then turned back to the desk. She still wanted to interview some Chandra, but perhaps ones who were a little more reflective than Milan. In the desk, she found a notebook with some of Eirich's observations and sketches about the ship, written in a shaky scrawl, along with a map of the area. The more she discovered, the more certain she was that the Set hadn't built this vessel. They were studying it as much as repairing it. Marcy tucked the book into her purse. "See? Handy," she thought. After that, she rose to check the other door out of the room. She wouldn't want to have some random carpenter wander in. She cracked it open and peeked into a completely dark room, and was immediately hit with a pungent odor like that of the slums. Unwashed bodies, dirt and grime. Frowning, she opened the door wider. The shaded illumination of the lamp, which faced the wrong way to give direct light, crept hesitantly into the room. Shadows stretched long from a few bare tables and a stack of boxes, and beyond them,
Were those cages? Yes. Perhaps 4 feet tall, with thick bars, the cages looked like the type you might use to contain a large animal. They were empty.
Milan?
Marcy asked, glancing at the Condra, who did not respond. She looked utterly absorbed by her task. Marcy inched into the room, wishing for another light. What did they keep in here? Guard dogs? She hadn't seen any of those at the perimeter. She stopped near one of the three large cages, bending over to see if she could determine what kind of animal had been kept in it. Something rustled in the next cage over. Marcy's breath caught. What she'd mistaken for a lump of blankets or pillows was moving. She glanced toward the desk in the other room where she'd set her rifle. The thing lurched and slammed against the bars. Marcy gasped, jumping away, her back crashing against the stack of nearby boxes. Inside the cage, dim light reflected from a two-flat face of red and black, dark pits of eyes. The pictures. Marcy had forgotten the pictures that Relure had left. Horrible faces of red and black, with those deep, dark eyes. Images as if from a nightmare, drawn in frantic, scribbled strokes. The monsters were real. And there was one in the cage here, swathed in thick fur, face of polished red. It regarded her, silent, then reached out between the bars with a shockingly human hand and whispered a single word through lips that somehow didn't move.
Please.
Wayne turned down his saunter and added a fair measure of scramble to his step instead. This engineer, he didn't like being here among all these soldiers. He'd spent his life building houses and working on skyscrapers, and now here he was, basically in the middle of a bivouac. That ship was marvelous, but he had a distinct worry. It was secret, and secret projects were the kind where little men like himself disappeared when everything was finished. Now, something's wrong, Wayne thought, halfway across the floor of the warehouse. He didn't stop walking, but he turned his steps in a little circle like he was pacing. Something was wrong, but what was it?
Wayne?
Wax hissed from the shadows nearby, crouched beside a barrel of pitch. Wayne ignored him, continuing his loop. He was a scientist. No, an engineer. He was a working man. Learned enough, but not some fancy professor who was paid to stand all day and talk. He built things, and he hated being in this place with all its guns. He encouraged life, and the soldiers were the opposite of that. They...
No,
he thought again, raising his hands to the sides of his head.
Wrong. Shape up, Wayne. This was your plan. You've got to make it work.
What was wrong? He stopped, then reached into the pocket of his vest and took out a charcoal pencil. He held it up, inspecting it, before slipping it behind his ear. He let out a long sigh. He was an engineer, a no-nonsense man who saw that things got done. He liked it here, as they had a military way about them. They said what they wanted and were straight with him. Men were rewarded for hard work. He didn't like all those guns, and he certainly didn't like the men in charge of this place. There was something off about them. But he held his tongue. Relaxing, Wayne crossed the rest of the way to the door guard. False nose, mustache, and a little extra air in the cheeks to fatten his face, and a perpetual squint in the right eye. Came from looking at plans all the time, he figured. But he didn't need a monocle. Those things looked downright stupid. He stepped up to the guard.
The lattice supports of the apricity are completely liminal.
The man blinked at him.
Don't just stand there,
Wayne said, waving toward the walls of the warehouse.
Can't you see that the forebode malefactors are starting to bow? We could have a full-blown bannock on our hands at any minute.
What?
The guard said.
What am I supposed to...
Please,
Wayne said, pushing him aside. The man led him, and pulling open the door. The scene beyond was as Wax had described it. There was Telson, all right. Dark hair, rugged body. Almost like a roughs woman. He'd seen her Havana types all over the mansion. Looked older now. Being a prisoner could do that to somebody. Tweaked Leg and Thick Neck stood beside her table, and both turned with annoyance toward him. Now, Wayne thought, focusing on Tweaked Leg, the real taste.
We've got a serious problem, Wayne said. I've been checking the integrity of the structure. The Coronals are completely nephelogenous out there. We are about to have a full-blown case of xenolagnia if somebody doesn't do something.
The bespectacled man looked at Wayne, blinked once, then said,
Well, of course we will, you idiot. But what do we do about it?
Wayne held back a smile, tucking it into his pocket for later use. It seemed to him that the smarter a man was, the more likely he was to pretend he knew more than he did. Like the way the drunkest fellow at the pub was always the one who was most sure he could handle another pint. Tweaked Leg would sooner sell his own grandmother as a footstool than admit he didn't know what Wayne was talking about.
Quickly,
Wayne said, gesturing.
We've got to hold it up while I ratchet the Soprostomus underlays. You'll need to supervise while I work.
Tweaked Leg sighed, but walked out. Thankfully, his thick-necked companion followed. Within moments, Wayne had this guy pushing against the supports of the ship's pontoon, while Tweaked Leg observed a few guards joining in to help. A soft thump from behind indicated that Wax had dealt with the guard at the door. Normally, Wayne would feel left out, since he didn't get to do any hitting. This time, though, Wayne got to make a bunch of idiots stand with their hands pressed against some wood, thinking they were keeping the ship from tipping over. So it evened out.
Police.
The creature spoke with a strange accent, but the voice was unmistakably human. Marcy breathed in and out in sharp breaths, regarding that hand reaching for her. A human hand. Lips that didn't move. Polished skin. That wasn't a face, but a mask. This wasn't some horrible creature, but a person in a wooden mask, the eye holes caught by the shadows. What Marcy had mistaken for fur was thick blankets clutched around the person's shoulders.
Marcy?
Milan asked. The conjurer appeared in the doorway.
I got it open. What are you doing? What the hell is that?
It's a person, Marcy said. The masked one turned toward Milan, and the new angle lit the holes in its mask, illuminating human eyes with brown irises. Marcy stepped forward.
Who are you?
The person turned back to her and said something completely unintelligible. Then it paused and said,
Police.
That was a man's voice.
We've got to go, Milan said. Safe is open. Is the spike inside?
Marcy asked.
See for yourself.
Marcy hesitated, then hustled into the other room, passing Milan.
Please!
The man cried, huddled against the bars, reaching out. The safe gaped open in the corner of the room. The top shelf was cluttered with objects, including the little allomantic grenade. Prominent among them was also a length of silvery metal. Chondra spikes, as proven in the bleeder case, were smaller than Marcy might have once imagined, less than 3 inches long and slender, not at all like the spikes in Death's Eyes. She knelt beside the safe, taking it out.
We have it, Marcy said, turning to Milan. Do you want to carry it?
Milan shook her head.
We don't touch one another's spikes.
Marcy frowned, remembering the stories. Didn't the Guardian...
Yes.
Milan's face remained impassive, but her tone was stern. Marcy shrugged, tucking the spike into her purse, then searched in the safe. She left the banknotes, stupid she knew, but it felt more like really robbing to take those, and took back the little cube that stored allomantic charges. Beside it were several other small relics. Each was coin-like, with cloth bands attached to the sides. They, too, bore the strange inscriptions in an unknown language. Marcy picked one up, then looked over Milan's shoulder in the other room, where the man in the mask slumped against his bars. Marcy tucked the disc in her purse, then reached farther into the safe, taking out something she'd noticed earlier. A small set of keys. She stood up and strode through the room.
Marcy?
Milan asked, sounding skeptical.
It might have some kind of disease.
He's not an it, Marcy said, stepping up to the cage. The figure twisted to regard her. Hand quivering only a little, she unlocked the cage, getting the right key on the second try. As soon as the lock clicked, the figure lunged for the cage door, throwing it open. Outside, he stumbled. He obviously hadn't been allowed to stand up straight for some time. Marcy backed away until she was beside Milan. The tall Chandra woman watched with a skeptical expression, arms folded, as the masked figure staggered up against the boxes, holding to them. He panted, then lurched away from the boxes toward the back of the room. There was a door there that Marcy hadn't noticed in the gloom, and the man frantically shoved it open, stepping into the next room. Lights flickered on as the man found a switch within.
"If he alerts the guards, I'm blaming you,"
Milan said, joining Marcy as they walked after the man.
"I would hate to have to tell Wax that..."
Milan trailed off as they reached the next room over.
"By the Lord in the first contract,"
Milan whispered. The floor was stained red. Operating tables of sleek metal crowded one wall, gleaming garishly compared to the macabre floor. On the wall hung a dozen wooden masks like the one the man wore. He had fallen to his knees before them, looking up. Dried blood stained the wall where it had dripped from a few of the masks. Marcy raised her hand to her mouth, taking in the gruesome scene. There were no bodies, but the blood bespoke a massacre. The man she'd rescued lifted his mask with a trembling hand, tipping it back so it rested on the top of his head, exposing his face. A young face, much younger than she'd imagined. A youth not yet 20, she guessed, with a short, wispy beard and mustache. He stared up at those masks, unblinking, hands spread to the sides in disbelief. Marcy stepped forward, moving to lift the hem of her skirt so as not to brush that bloody ground, before remembering she had on trousers. As she reached the youth, he turned to her.
"Please,"
he whispered, tears in his eyes. Wax stepped into the room. Telson sat twirling a pencil in her hand. There was a speaking box before her on the table, but making no sound. She turned lazily to see who had entered, then froze in place, gaping. He closed the door quietly, aluminum gun in his other hand. He started to speak, but Telson leaped from her chair and threw herself into his arms. Head against his chest, she started weeping softly.
"Rusts," he said, holding her, feeling awkward. "What did they do to you, Telson?"
He wasn't certain what he'd expected from their reunion, but this hadn't been it. He didn't think he'd ever seen her cry. He certainly couldn't remember it. She shook her head, pulling back, sniffling and setting her jaw. She looked old. Not that she was ancient, but he remembered her as a youth, not a middle-aged woman. Stupid though it sounded, he hadn't expected age to come for Telson. She had always seemed invincible.
"No other ways out of this room?" Wax asked, glancing about.
"No," she said. "Do you have another weapon?"
He pulled out one of his Starions and handed it to her.
"Do you know how to use it?"
"I'm a fast learner," she said, looking far more comfortable now that she had a gun in her hand.
"Telson," Wax said. "Is he here, our uncle?"
"No. I was just speaking with him through that device. He likes to check in on me. I have to tell him how wonderful I think my accommodations are. He pretends I'm his guest, even still."
"Well, you're not. Not anymore. Let's go."
Hopefully, Wayne's distraction was still working. Telson, however, sat down in her chair again. She gripped that gun in both hands, held before her, but she stared unseeingly.
"There's so much to ask. Why did you come back? Rusts, why did you leave Waxillium? You didn't come when I sent to you, when I was engaged to Morin, when our parents died."
"There isn't time," Wax said, seizing her by the shoulder. She looked up at him, dazed.
"You were always the quiet one,"
a thoughtful one. How did you get here? Your face, Waxelium. You're old.
The door suddenly slammed open. The tall, thick-armed man that Wax had fought on the train stood there, looking stunned. He turned from Wax to Telson and opened his mouth. Telson shot him.
"We need to go,"
Milan said.
"We're bringing him," Marcy said, pointing to the man.
"Why?"
"Haven't you figured it out, Milan?" Marcy asked. "That ship out there wasn't built by the Set. It's from somewhere else, someplace distant and alien. It probably wrecked near our coast, and the Set brought it here to be studied."
Milan cocked her head.
"Harmony does say odd things sometimes, about other peoples, not from the basin."
She blinked, focusing on the man kneeling on the bloody floor.
"Wow. Wow."
Marcy nodded. Proof that there was life past the roughs and the deserts beyond. She couldn't let him stay here, particularly not with the Set.
"Bring him then,"
Milan said, moving out of the room.
"And let's get back to the meeting point."
Marcy gestured toward the way out, trying to usher the masked man along. He just knelt there on the bloody floor, looking up at those hollow masks on the wall. Then, with a trembling finger, he reached up and slid his mask back down over his face. He stood and pulled his blankets tight, shambling after Marcy as she crossed the room with the cages and entered the study. Milan was already out in the hallway beyond. Marcy fetched her rifle and moved to join the Chondra. Rusts, what was Waxelium going to say when he found out she'd picked up a stray? She could almost hear his voice.
"You freed him, Marcy, but for all he knows, you're a member of the same group who apparently killed his friends. Be careful."
She stopped at the door and looked back, gripping her rifle more tightly. Waxelium could be a curmudgeon, but he was right more often than not. The masked man might be dangerous. He had stopped inside the room with the safe, looking about, seeming dazed. How long had he been in that little cage, trapped in the darkness, listening as his friends were taken, tortured, and killed? Rust and ruin. His eyes found the safe, fixating upon it, and then he crossed the room in a shuffle. He reached inside, and for a moment she assumed he was going for the banknotes, but of course not. He pulled out one of the little discs with the straps. He held it up, seeming awed, then shucked off the blankets he'd been wearing like a cloak. She'd expected him to be wearing a loincloth or something savage underneath, but instead he was dressed in trousers that went down to just below his knees, under which he wore tight white socks. His shirt was loose and white, and over it he wore a snug red vest, matching his mask in coloring, with a double row of buttons up the front. She'd never seen clothing like it before, but it was hardly savage. The man yanked up one sleeve, exposing his arm, and strapped on the disc by its cloth ties. He let out a relieved sigh. Looking toward her again, he seemed more confident now. He was a short man, even a few inches shorter than Wayne, but seemed to have grown a foot by standing up straight and discarding those thick blankets. But Rusts, how were they going to sneak him out? He was hardly inconspicuous with that mask. Perhaps Marcy and Milan could openly move short distances in here without drawing attention, but this man certainly couldn't. A series of gunshots rang out in the warehouse. Perhaps sneaking wouldn't be an issue.